And now, coming to you from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting throughout the multiverse, the Nine Realms, Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, Nidaveller, basically anywhere that has the internet, really, we proudly present Radio Free Asgard.
You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 207. The Lay of Hymir. The gods had plenty of food, but they had run out of mead and ale. They began to feast, but the more they ate, the less they felt like eating, with no drink to wash the food down. They sacrificed a small animal and dipped twigs into its blood. They shook them, and the runes scored on them began to shine. They shook them again and divined that Aegir, god of the sea, could help them. So a group of gods and goddesses left Asgard and made for the island of Hlesi, and there they found Aegir and his wife Ran in their hall beneath the waves, lit only by gleaming gold. The sea god was sitting at peace with the world and as blithe as a child. Thor, son of Odin, soon put an end to that. He looked Aegir in the eye and almost blinded him. "Brew some ale for the gods," he commanded. "Brew it at once, and brew plenty of it." Thor's abrupt tone angered Aegir. He lowered his eyes and considered how to repay him.
"I've no cauldron that could hold enough," he said. "Bring me a cauldron, Thor, and I'll brew ale for all the gods."
The gods and goddesses looked at each other. None of them owned a cauldron that was large enough, nor did they have the least idea where they could get one. Then one-handed Tyr, always truthful, turned to the Thunder God and volunteered.
"My father, the giant Hymir, lives away to the east, beyond the stormy waves of the Elvigar. I know he has a cauldron, a huge cauldron, 5 miles deep."
"Do you think we could lay hands on it?" asked Thor. "This water whirler?"
"We can," said Tyr, "but only if we're cunning. Do not reveal who you are. Call yourself Vue."
So Thor and Tyr set off at high speed, and that same day they reached Egil's farm, where Thor left his high-horned goats, Tangnost, Toothgrinder, and Tangrisni, Gattooth. Then the gods headed east and crossed the Elvigar. They traveled almost to the end of the earth and the sky above, and at last they came to Hymir's hall. It stood on a mountain quite close to the sea. The first person they came across was Tyr's grandmother, for whom Tyr had very little love. She was a monster with 900 heads. Thor shook his head and marveled greatly. But then Tyr's mother walked into the hall. She had the most beautiful pale skin and wore a necklace and armbands of gold. She welcomed her son and Thor and brought them goblets of ale.
"Giant blood runs in my veins," she said. "I know what's what. Brave as you both may be, I think you'd better hide beneath one of the cauldrons. My husband has a rather brusque way of greeting his guests."
As might be expected, Thor had little liking for the suggestion, but Tyr sided with his mother and asked Thor what he stood to lose by being a little cautious. And so they waited in safety until ugly Hymir came in late from hunting. As he walked into the hall, the icicles hanging from his frozen beard clinked and chinked. Hymir's wife got up to meet them.
"Greetings, Hymir. You've got good reason to be happy. Your son is here in the hall. How long we've waited while he journeyed far and wide. And he has brought a companion with him, the foe of Hrod and a friend to all men. He is called Vur."
Hymir's gentle wife tried to soften the heart of her husband.
"Look at them sitting at the end of the hall under the gable, hiding beneath one of those supports and hoping it will guard them."
The giant glared balefully at the support, and at once the gable's crossbeam cracked. Then 8 well-tempered cauldrons toppled and fell from the shelf there. They crashed onto the hall floor and smashed into smithereens. Only one did not break, the one under which Thor and Tyr were sheltering. The two gods crawled out from under the rim, and Hymir faced them. The old giant's eyes glittered, and he pierced them with his gaze. But when he saw Hrod's sworn enemy step into the open, he felt uneasy himself, and knew no good could come of his visit. All the same, he made due provision for his guests. He gave orders to his servants that no less than 3 oxen should be slaughtered and flayed and boiled. At once his servants lopped off the heads of the cattle and carried them to the cauldron hanging over the fire. The meal was prepared. And before he went to sleep that night, Sif's husband Thor astonished Hymir by devouring 2 whole oxen. Hymir, the friend of Hungnir, said, "If the 3 of us want to eat again together, we'll have to go out hunting." "Let us go out rowing, then, and see what we can get," said Vuur to the savage giant. "All I need from you is bait." "Help yourself from the pasture where my herd is grazing," said Hymir. "I've no doubt, giant killer, that you'll find a turd or 2 there easily enough." The god at once made his way out of Hymir's hall into the steep pasture surrounding it. There he found a splendid black ox, Himinhyrjot, the heaven bellower. The giant killer grabbed its high horns and wrenched them apart until they snapped, and then he broke the beast's neck.
"What you ate was bad enough," said Hymir grimly, "but it seems to me you've even more of a nuisance left at large than sitting by my fire."
Hymir and Thor left the others behind in the hall and went down to the sea. They launched the giant's boat, and to begin with, Thor manned the oars. Then Hymir took over. The giant kinsman of apes rowed well out from the land and then shipped his oars so that he could start to fish.
"Further," urged Thor. "Row further." "I don't want to row 1 stroke further," Hymir replied.
The fierce giant began to prepare his tackle. He fixed hooks to his line and cast it over the gunwale. Almost at once the line tightened and Hymir hauled up 2 whales, hissing and sighing and churning the water into a maelstrom. Odin's son Vuur was sitting in the stern, and he prepared his gear with great care. The slaughterer of monsters and guardian of men baited his hook with the head of the ox heaven bellower. Then he cast his line into the dark water. Under the waves, the enemy of the gods, the serpent surrounding Midgard, let go of its own tail and gaped and took the bait. Thor did not hesitate. Fist over fist, he quickly pulled in his line. Jormungand, the Midgard serpent, lashed the sea into a frenzy. The water fizzed and frothed, but the thunder god did not loosen his grip. He dragged the monster up under the keel and then began to haul it over the gunwale. Then Thor raised his hammer and it sang a grisly song on the hairy head of that terrible serpent, brother of Fenrir. The serpent roared and the mountains of Jotunheim heard and replied. Midgard shuddered. Jormungand tugged at the great barb piercing the roof of its mouth. It twisted and wrenched, and at last with a tearing of flesh it set itself free. The serpent sank once more to the bottom of the sea. Shaken and appalled by what he had seen, Hymir had no heart for words and made heavy weather of the homeward journey. First he pulled strongly on 1 oar, then on the other, in the hopes of picking up a following wind to carry them closer to land and into calmer water. When the keel finally scraped the shingle and the boat lodged, Hymir said,
"There's enough work here for 2 pairs of hands. Would you drag the boat up beyond the high tide mark and secure it, or would you rather pull the whales back to my hall?"
Without even bothering to reply, the charioteer stood up and stepped out of the boat. He grabbed the prow with his massive fists and began to raise it. The bilge water slopped and swilled back to the stern. Then the god began to drag the boat with the 2 whales, the oars, and the great baler still inside it. He hauled it across sand, on through a birch wood, and over a hill until he reached Hymir's hall. Tyr and his mother welcomed them there, and marveled at Thor's feat in bringing the boat and the cargo up from the sea. Even now, stubborn Hymir would not own that he had come in second best, and he resolved on another test of strength.
"You're a fair oarman, certainly," he said, "but so are many others. I'd only call a man strong if he were able to smash this glass goblet."
The charioteer took the goblet from Hymir and promptly hurled it against one of the stone pillars supporting the gable. The hall was filled with bits and pieces of flying masonry. Then one of the giant's servants hurried down to the end of the hall and picked up the goblet from the heap of rubble. It was unbroken, and he brought it back to Hymir. Hymir's wife bent her head towards Thor.
"Throw it at his head," she whispered. "He eats so much that it's almost solid. However hard that glass is, his head must be harder."
Then the charioteer stood up again. He turned to face Hymir, and with all his divine strength threw the goblet straight at the giant's forehead. Hymir's skull remained intact, but the wine goblet fractured and fell to the floor in two pieces. Hymir bent down and picked them up, and put them on his knees and stared at them.
"With the loss of this goblet," he said sadly, "I lose far more than a goblet."
The giant shook his head as if suddenly all his strength had ebbed from him.
"What's mine is yours now. My last cauldron is yours," he said. "I can't stop you from taking it. Even so, it will be a mighty task to cart it out of this hall. I'll never be able to say again, 'Brew for me cauldron, cauldron, brew me ale.'"
Tyr did not need to be invited twice. He jumped down and took a hold of the cauldron and began to pull, but he was unable to move it. Hymir looked at him and smiled sourly. Then Tyr tried again. He filled his lungs and pulled, but the cauldron only rocked and settled back into its original position. Now Thor seized the rim. The cauldron was so massive and Thor exerted so much pressure that his feet splintered the wooden planks and broke right through the hall floor. Then the god hoisted the vast cauldron onto his shoulder and strode out of the hall. Its handles yapped at his ankles. Thor and Tyr had not gone far before Thor turned round, wanting to have a last look at Hymir's hall. It was just as well that he did. The first thing he saw was Hymir and a whole throng of many-headed giants who had left their lairs in the east and were coming after them. Thor eased the massive cauldron from his shoulder and set it down on the ground. Then his hands were free to take a grip on Mjolnir. He stood his ground and swung his hammer. Not a single monster, not one prowler of the wilderness, was able to withstand it. Now Thor shouldered the cauldron again, and the two gods hurried on. It was not long before they reached Egil's farm, where Thor had left his chariot and goats, though one, thanks to Loki, was lame and limped in its harness. Thor returned home while the gods were meeting in solemn assembly at the Well of Urd, under the branches of Yggdrasil. All the gods gazed at the cauldron, amazed, and they acclaimed Thor and his companion Tyr. So Aegir was outwitted. Thor gave him the cauldron and took away his pride. And that winter, and every winter, the gods drank tides of warming ale brewed for them in the sea gods' gleaming hall.
So I hope you liked The Lay of Hymir. It's one of those stories that I'd heard rather differently. And what's interesting about this story is that this was evidently an extremely popular story back in the ancient days, because we have no fewer than four different versions of the story. Now, thankfully, Kevin Crossley Holland has included two different versions of the story in this book. And so you're going to get a little bit of bonus here, because I'm going to actually read you the other version. Now, what's interesting is most of the adaptations that Kevin Crossley Holland did in the book were actually adapted from the work of Snorri Sturluson. This is one of the myths that actually came from an older source. And the other version that we're going to read now is actually Snorri's version, and as you'll see, it's very different and a lot shorter than this initial version, and it omits certain characters entirely. So once again, I hope you'll enjoy it. How we handle this when we get to the myth compilation show that this is supposed to be in, I have no clue how we're going to handle having both of these in there, but we'll manage somehow anyway. Yeah, I think that this is one of those myths that a lot of us have heard. And this version, Snorri's version that we're about to read, may seem a little bit more familiar to you. So here's another version of The Lay of Hymir. One doesn't have to be an authority to know that Thor made amends for the expedition to the court of Utgard-Loki. He did not stay long at home before he got ready for a journey in such haste that he took with him neither chariot nor goats, nor companions. He went out of Asgard disguised as a youth, and came in the evening to a giant called Hymir. Thor stayed there that night, and at daybreak Hymir got up and dressed and prepared to go sea fishing in a rowing boat. Thor sprang up, and was soon ready in asking Hymir to let him go rowing with him. Hymir said that he could not be such help, as he was such a scrap of a young fellow.
"You'll catch cold if I sit as long and as far out to sea as I usually do."
Thor, however, said he was able to row a long way out from the shore all the same, and it wasn't certain that he would be the first to demand to be rowed back. And he got so angry with the giant that he was ready incontinently to set the hammer ringing on his head. He controlled himself, however, as he was intending to try his strength in another place. He asked Hymir what they were to take as bait, but Hymir told him to get his own. Then Thor turned away, where he saw a herd of oxen belonging to Hymir, and taking the biggest ox, which was called Sky Bellower, he struck off its head and went down to the sea with it. By then Hymir had launched his boat. Thor went on board and, sitting down in the stern, took two oars and rowed. Hymir thought they made rapid progress from his rowing. Hymir rowed bow, and the rowing went on apace until Hymir said that he had come to those banks where he was accustomed to sit and catch flat fish. But Thor said he wanted to row much further out, and they had another bout of fast rowing. Then Hymir said they had come out so far that it would be dangerous to sit here on account of the Midgard serpent. Thor, however, declared his intention of rowing for a bit yet, and did so, and Hymir was not at all pleased with that. When Thor shipped his oars, he made ready a very strong line, and the hook was just as big and firm. Baiting the hook with the ox head, he flung it overboard. It sank to the bottom, and it's a fact that on this occasion, Thor made as great a fool of the Midgard serpent as Utgard Loki had of Thor when he was trying to lift the serpent up with his arm. The Midgard serpent snapped at the ox head, but the hook stuck fast in the roof of its mouth, and when it realized that, it jerked away so hard that both of Thor's fists knocked against the gunwale. Then Thor grew angry, and exerting all his divine strength, dug in his heels so hard that both legs went through the boat, and he was digging his heels in on the sea bottom. He drew the serpent up on board, and it must be said that no one has seen anything to be afraid of who didn't see how Thor fixed the serpent with his eye, and how the serpent glared back, belching poison. We are told that the giant Hymir lost color then, and turned pale with fear when he saw the serpent in the sea tumbling in and out of the vessel too. The very moment Thor gripped his hammer and raised it aloft, the giant fumbled for his bait knife and cut Thor's line off at the gunwale, and the serpent sank back into the sea. Thor flung his hammer after it, and people say that this struck its head off in the waves. But I think the truth is that the Midgard serpent is still alive, lying in the ocean. Thor clenched his fist and gave Hymir a box on the ear so that he fell overboard head first, but he himself waded ashore. So really interesting how the two of these stories differ. At the same time, you know, the basic event, that is the fishing trip out where Thor manages to catch the Midgard serpent, is the same. And it's interesting that how when you have different versions of these stories, they can differ so much. And of course, we frequently have encountered smaller differences. And there's one in this story, too. And that's where the author tells us about Thor's goat's leg being made lame by Loki. Now, if you remember back to when we talked about the story of Thialfi, Thialfi was actually the one who split open the goat's leg. So Loki really had nothing to do with that. But yet, that's a different version of the story, apparently, that we no longer have. It's really a shame, even more so than we've already talked about in the past. It's such a shame that we don't have multiple versions of all of these stories and different readings of all of these different stories. Because this is the version, the Snorri Sturluson version, is the version that I heard as a kid. So when I picked up the book to read, you know, the Lay of Hymir for the show, it's like, wait, I don't remember Tyr being part of the story at all. But anyway, that's what you get. All right, so with that, it's about time to wrap up the show. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. We really do appreciate it. If you want to get a hold of us, it's easy to do so. You can email the show at radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Just look for us there, Radio Free Asgard, and you will find us. And we're also available on Twitter. So come join us on Twitter, follow us, and you can get little bits and pieces here and there of things that I say, little one-liners and that kind of thing. And I'm really not good at Twitter yet, but hey, you know, I'm new there and we're just getting started, and I would love to have you as a follower. And of course, I follow everybody back, so you get new followers as well. And with that, I am back over the Rainbow Bridge. Maybe I'm going to go fishing with an ox head. Yeah, that seems like a great idea. Wave at Grandma over there on the shore with her 900 heads. Anyway, we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.